Hello, and welcome to another episode of Tungsudo Focus, a podcast concerning all things related to the Korean martial art of Tungsudo. I'm your host, Steve Paterini, and today's episode, number 19, is 10 tips on how to improve your preparation for a tournament. Now, I think it's fair to say that most Tungsudo students are involved in some way in competition or tournaments that you attend. Usually, there's somewhat of a tournament season in the fall and in the spring, although I'm sure there are year-round opportunities to compete, and may have talked about in past episodes the benefits of tournament training and competition. It sharpens your focus. It gives you a goal with a definitive deadline. All sorts of good things happen at tournaments, including making friends from other schools. And over the years, sometimes they become some of your closest friends and colleagues because you all love this art of Tungsudo so much. So there's a lot of benefits from competing in a tournament. I'm not going to go into those at this point, but I was thinking about 10 quick things that you could do to try to get yourself in a better position when that tournament or competition opportunity arises, and how you can best present yourself and hopefully do well for yourself, bring pride to your school and to your instructor. And, you know, it's never a bad thing to come home with some medals or trophies. It is a tangible reward or a symbol of the hard work you have done, and that's always a good thing, especially among children. If you're a parent of a child who's in Tungsudo, those little rewards can those shiny things can often really give a boost to a kid's confidence and to their interest in Tungsudo and continue their training to allow them to enjoy the rest of the benefits that you would derive from Tungsudo. So my first tip, because I have 10 here, just like my favorite talk show host, David Letterman, used to have the top 10 list. So here are 10, or the top 10 ways you can get ready for a tournament. Number one, make a countdown calendar. I know that it's easy to print off on paper an online version of a calendar, or use Microsoft Publisher, something like that. Certainly, most of us have some kind of a calendar app on our phone or on our tablets. I like to have the piece of paper. I find it tangibly crossing off the days as we go. Just kind of makes it feel a little more visceral and a little more real to me as we're getting closer and closer to our training. So whatever your form, if you're a more digital person, circle that date, count backwards, and figure out how many days you have left until the tournament. How many weeks do you have left until the tournament? And just being able to kind of measure that, look at, depending upon what your time of year is. There's often tournament seasons in the fall. Well, back to school is a very busy time. In the spring, you might have April vacation if you're a family with school-age children, or if you're a student. So that might be a week of training you know you're going to miss if you're going on a cruise or something like that in April. So just kind of plotting out and knowing ahead of time. Listen, tournaments don't happen by accident. The people who sponsor and organize and run the tournaments put them out there months in advance. And in fact, among certain groups of Tungsudo schools, people kind of have staked out their weekend in the fall or in the spring, where it's like, oh yeah, that's when they have the New England Championships every year, or that's when they have the Fall Classic. And you can kind of know when that is going to be within, you know, again, a couple of weeks. And as it gets closer and your instructor or the person sponsoring the tournament locks down the location and the time and gets that all settled, then you can really start to use a calendar as a visual aid, as a training aid to get you ready and focused at the proper time right before the tournament. So tip number one would be to make that countdown calendar. And number two is somewhat related: plan your training and schedule the classes you're going to take between now and that tournament. Once again, you might have interruptions. Maybe you're in theater at school and you have a production coming up that you know is going to eat up a lot of your time. Once again, I talked about the possibility of a family vacation or some other sort of interruption. You know what days you usually train. Usually people are a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday kind of girl, or a Monday, Wednesday, Friday sort of a guy. And you know when you're going to be training. Maybe you kick that up a little bit. Just again, committing to that, writing it down actually makes it more than just a dream. It actually makes it a goal and something that's a little more more real. So look at that calendar and put a little star on each of the days you plan on training. Figure out how many classes there are that you're going to train in before the tournament. Figure out if you can squeeze in a few extra classes on days you normally would not train. But once again, without a plan, and without some sort of focus on your training and being a little more intentional about it, I don't think you will perform as well at the time of the tournament. So the calendar and planning your classes and training sessions is a pretty good tip to get you better prepared. Now, most tournaments are empty hands forms, weapons, and sparring. Sometimes breaking as well, or sometimes breaking takes the place of weapons. I would say almost every competition I've been to always has empty hand forms, youngs, and also sparring, of course. So in advance, well in advance of the tournament, you should decide what form you're planning on doing for your weapons, for your empty hands form. And if you're breaking, start thinking about the break you're going to do. Showing up the morning of the tournament and then being like, oh, yeah, I think I could do a twin front kick, and then that's too late. All right. So maybe you have just advanced in rank. You're learning a new form, especially newly minted black belts. You might do the highest form that you had at Shodan Bo rather than as a newly minted Shodan. Competing against other black belts, by the way, with your new Don form. It's up to you, and it might be a conversation you have with your instructor or some of your seniors to try to better determine what's appropriate and what's going to allow you to show your best self at the tournament. But once again, having that focus on those particular forms, certainly training is going to be generalized as it always is, and you're going to be continuing to work on your new form if you plan to compete with your last ranks form, and you're always working on self-defense and all sorts of other aspects of Tungsudo. But I think during tournament season, we tend to focus more on things that are going to show up and that you're going to be judged on. Now, having competed in many tournaments through the years and judged at many more over the years, number four, my advice is to practice your introduction. And I wrote in my notes, in the mirror, which I guess is what I'm trying to say is more than just on the floor of the dojang. But I have been to many, many tournaments sitting there as a judge and seen people basically ensure that they're not going to win with their poor presentation. They mumble, they don't have good mudo spirit, they don't make eye contact, they just are sloppy chumbi, everything about it. You can tell sometimes, I mean, we all have different personalities. Some people are very quite introverted and are nervous, and they just become very, very reticent and just, they don't present very well. This is something you can work on. Even if you have that sort of a personality where you're not an outgoing person, you don't like attention being cast on you, practicing a proud, spirited introduction. Judges, my name is whatever the protocol is, and that may vary from school to school. I have certainly seen students who get a little over excited in their introduction, but I will say this, most tournaments are noisy, chaotic places, and if you come up in front of a panel of judges doing a nice sharp chumbi, making good eye contact, speaking clearly, stating your name, your school, the form you intend to do, thanking the judges or asking for permission to begin, bowing and stepping back in a respectful and martial manner is going to if it doesn't help you win, it can certainly help you to lose. So this is something that you need to practice. And again, I said practice in the mirror. You may feel silly doing it in your bedroom or in the bathroom. You can turn the vent on or the shower to drown out your voice, but you should be practicing this before and after class in your house and as part of your training as you're doing your tournament forms. Practice the walk-up, practice your intro, and then perform your particular form that you plan to do at the tournament. I think that's an important part of tournament prep, and I don't care how beautiful your form is, if your introduction is sloppy and lackadaisical, you're probably not going to place. So looking at my notes here, I guess I actually combined tip number 4, practice your intro in the mirror, and 5, practice your intro in the studio. Again, maybe a little more emphasis on the idea of course, if you're not the instructor, you don't get the chance to call out and dictate what's happening in class. But I know that in our school, very much so at the few weeks before tournament, our students will ask them to do their full introduction as well as their form to get them into that state of mind. So that's something you can work on. And if your instructor doesn't give you the opportunity to do that during class, well then after class, before class, in your uniform, in a more formal dojang setting, that's probably going to be quite beneficial. So that were 4 and 5. 6, oh my goodness, work on your key ups. 1, know where the key ups are in your form according to your instructor. It may vary from school to school and style and style, but there are some that are quite obvious and very obvious when they are not given, when we don't hear a key up at the top of a line during a form. So know where those key ups are. And, something about particularly, and I know I always seem to rail on the youth here, but I guess youth have the most to learn because of inexperience. I work in a middle school. I walk by the cafeteria sometimes. Middle schoolers are some of the loudest mammals on the planet, okay? Elementary school children might even be louder. And then you ask them to key up in their form, and they go, "Eep." That's just not a key up. A key up is supposed to inspire fear in our opponents. It's supposed to give us energy. It should be loud. It should be proud. Throughout the years, I have seen some circumstances where people get a little overboard with their key ups and key up too often, key up too loud. And honestly, it's almost a little obnoxious. But I would say it is way more frequent to have somebody come up and do an amazing form. Well done technique. 0 key ups. Do you think they're going to win? Probably not. Just like doing your presentation in the mirror or in front of your classmates or your instructors, practicing those key ups is something that you need to do, especially if you're one of those people with the personality where you're not a loud and outgoing sort of person. If you're already into drama club and you sing in the choir at school and things like that, maybe you're in the announcers club or something, that I bet you probably have the personality that allows you to key up a little more confidently. But if you don't, it's definitely something that can be improved with practice, and a lack of good spirited key ups can definitely hurt your score. One of the greatest resources you have as a Tung Soo Do student is that you have classmates and you have seniors that you can ask, "Hey, would you please watch me do my form and give me some feedback?" Certainly, that's part of the tournament prep we do in class as well as we're getting close to a tournament. But I've talked about these opportunities to train before and after class. I guess what I'm trying to say is certainly your instructors are your main source of feedback and being able to reflect on your performance and improve it. But, your peers who are working on the same form might be, this is that tricky part. I always mess up here. Or somebody who's 1 or 2 ranks ahead of you, they might have some very distinct memories. "Oh, I remember I went to the tournament and I totally forgot to do that crescent kick before we turned and did the X block." And, those kinds of comments and that kind of feedback from your peers and your seniors can give you a great deal of insight into what you need to improve on And that's something that is almost as important as the feedback you're going to get from your instructors. Once again, your instructor is looking at a whole floor full of people. And if you ask one of your peers, one of your colleagues, one of your classmates, hey, would you mind just watching this and let me know what you think? That's going to give you some more feedback from a different source, and that's going to help you get better as well. In kind of a callback to a previous episode, I believe it was 5 ways to improve your Tung Sido, one of the tips I talked about was videotaping. And again, I'm kind of old school, so I still call it videotaping, but recording video of yourself doing your forms and watching that video, which often is quite uncomfortable. Sometimes it is what I call cringeworthy. It makes us sort of not feel so good about ourselves. But the camera does not lie. And having a friend or a classmate or your parents, if you're at your house or something like that, have somebody. By the way, most of us at least have a really good video camera in our pocket in the form of our cell phone. So have some video taken, watch the video, look for your own flaws. The one thing we can't do while we're performing a form is see it from the outside. Our eyes are inside our skull, which is attached to our body. Mirrors help, but seeing yourself from the perspective of a outsider, which of course your judges will be outside of your body and watching you objectively in space. So seeing that perspective from a video that has been taken of you performing your weapons, your forms, maybe even your sparring combinations. Have somebody watch you video you sparring with some partners, and you might start to notice some tendencies. Let's face it, while you're sparring, you're a little busy, okay? You're trying not to get hit or kicked in the head. So being able to have some video to look at after the fact and analyze and try to figure out what might be something that's effective technique for you, first of all, what's working for you, but I think even more so, tendencies you have that might be used against you by your opponents. So pull out a video recording device and hand it to somebody and say, hey, would you mind just taking a minute and helping me out, shoot some video of this. I want to use this to try to get better for the tournament. And maybe you do that for your colleague or your classmate as well, and you both improve your preparation for the tournament. Wow, so we've already ripped through 8 of my top 10 tips for tournament preparation. Number 9 is to gear up ahead of time and get used to your gear. Get acclimated and accustomed to it. The week before a tournament, you get brand new, foot pads or gloves or a helmet, even a mouth guard and a groin protection. These are things that you don't wear all the time, particularly the last two. Sparring with a mouth guard in is a whole different proposition than sparring without one. The way you breathe, things like that. So, if your gear is old and worn, or as a young person, if your body has grown out of the gear that you were using last year for the tournament, upgrade and get it ahead of time so you can wear it to class, you can train with it, you can break it in, especially things like helmets. And especially if they have some kind of a plastic face guard or something, sometimes they steam up, which is not a great situation, or they can slip down over your eyes and allow you not to see while you're sparring. Again, ill-advised. And just the having a level of comfort wearing your particular sparring gear is pretty important. And just, again, if the first time you put in that mouth guard, the groin protection, that helmet with the face guard, you decide to put that on the morning of the tournament, it's going to have a negative impact on your sparring and your ability to win. So I would say at least a month before, because let's say you want to order new gear. If you're ordering it online or through some sort of a catalog through your school, et cetera, it might take a while for it to come in if they don't have it in your size. So it might take a week or more for you to get the new gear. It's going to be all shiny and new and maybe a little bit slippery on your feet or on your hands when you put it on. And wear it, sweat into it, have it adjust and mold to your body as your body heat gets into those foam padding and such. And just get used to the fact that you're wearing this stuff. And when it comes time to gear up and put it on, oh, by the way, being able to put that gear on in a timely manner, all the straps and whatever you need to do. If we're waiting around a bunch of judges getting ready to run a sparring ring and you're the last kid in your division still putting on your gear, we're probably going to look at you a little bit sideways, like, what's going on with this kid? They can't even get themselves dressed. So find your gear ahead of time, double check it, make sure it's in good condition. And if you need to upgrade or add some new equipment, use it before the tournament so that you are comfortable with it. Number 10, when going to a tournament, particularly when going to a tournament for the first time to a new location, arrive early and get acclimated to the space. Unless it's your home tournament where you go every year and you know it, it's your high school gym perhaps, and you know it like the back of your hand. Boy, being in a new environment can be stressful in addition to all the other stressors that competition put upon us. I think when you enter a new space for a tournament, you should walk around, figure out where's the head table, how are the rings oriented. Maybe you've done all your training of your form facing a certain way in your dojang, and the ring you're going into might turn that 90 degrees, which can be very, very disorienting if you're not used to it. And if you get there early, you might even be able to go into one of those rings and practice your form 90 degrees or 180 degrees offset from the way you usually do it. And that can be pretty beneficial. How big is the room? Where are the exits? Where are the restrooms? Again, knowing where the head table is. How noisy is it? Where do you want to be to hear as they're calling out your ring numbers? Is there a PA or some sort of a speaker system that they're using to address the competitors? If you're traveling with family or friends and they are spectators, where are they going to sit? Where do you put your gear bag? There's a lot of things. And again, in a new space, you just got to kind of figure out, okay, where am I changing? Where's my gear bag going to go that it's going to be safe and not get taken? If you have something like a staff or a sword for your weapons form with you, where's that got to go? And again, just kind of getting yourself a little more comfortable in the space rather than walking into a brand new room that you've never been in before and trying to figure these things all out. Oh, and give your best performance of your forms and your best sparring technique. So I would say that if you can get there early, orient yourself in the room, figure things out. And again, if you can get there and even and you might not know ahead of time which ring you're going to compete in, but if you can practice your form in a ring, get used to the size of the ring. Where are the judges' chairs? Where's the timekeeper and the ring coordinator going to be sitting? Where's the audience? You might want to figure out where there's going to be a lot of cheering and noise coming from there. So all of those things can just make you that slight degree more comfortable in what's already a stressful situation. I think that would probably help improve your overall performance. So this is a pretty quick episode, but I still feel like going through this list of 10 tips for tournament preparation, you don't have to do all 10 of them. Maybe you should, but if you pick one or two of these and add them to your training before a tournament or a competition, I promise you, you will have better results. So number one, make a countdown calendar with the date of the tournament on it. Figure out how many days or weeks are left. Number two, plan your training. When are you going to take class? How many classes are you going to take between now and the date of the tournament to get ready? Choose your forms. Know what your weapons, your empty hands, if breaking is involved. Know what all those things are well in advance and practice them, obviously, to the point where, UConn women's basketball coach Gino Auriemma used to say that they don't practice until they get it right. They practice until they can't get it wrong. And I always thought of that as a great way of thinking about our training. Practice your form so much that you just can't get it wrong, no matter how confusing or tumultuous or noisy or busy the tournament situation is. All right, so that's number three, choosing your forms. Number four, practice your introduction in the mirror. Again, in your bathroom, in your bedroom, when the house is empty, if you're embarrassed by doing that out loud. But boy, having that kind of back to the point Coach Auriemma would say, do it until you can't get it wrong. And then also do that in the studio. If your instructors aren't providing you the opportunity to do tournament prep in that way, where you introduce yourself before practicing your form. Do it before or after class with some of your colleagues or peers. Let's see, working on your key ups. If you don't key up at the right times and you don't key up loudly at a tournament, it's just not going to have the proper spirit and it's not going to impress the judges. So that's number six. Number seven, have a peer or some of your seniors review your form. In addition to the feedback you're getting from your instructors, often, like I say, your peers or your seniors that aren't that far ahead of you might have some interesting insights because they've just been in your shoes recently. Number eight, use video recording and watch your forms and look for your own feedback or criticism of your techniques and figure out what you need to work on. The video camera does not lie, and it's actually just about from the perspective of what the judges are going to see. Number nine, make sure that your gear is in good shape, and if you're getting new gear, get it early and get used to it. Break it in, wear it a little bit so that you're comfortable with it, including all the gear, even the stuff that we usually only put on the day of, like mouth guards, etc. And then 10, if possible, arrive early to the competition site so you can get acclimated, so you can find your way around the room. You'll just feel a little more comfortable when you're finally called to your ring for competition. So look, there's I could have a whole other episode about the benefits of competition, and that's all well and good, but you always want to bring your best self to that competition. I mean, at the very least, you're spending a good chunk of money to participate in the tournament, and you don't want to just flush that money down the toilet. So you want to make sure that you are as prepared as possible. And a lot of these things that I just gave you don't involve lots of extra push-ups or running up and down stairs or all kinds of arduous physical endeavors. They're mostly organizational things and just being a little more deliberate about the way you're training leading up to the tournament. So hopefully some of these ideas resonate with you, and hopefully your next tournament you will use them and find that your performance has improved. So I'd like to thank you for listening to episode 19, 10 Tips for Tournament Preparation of Tung Sudo Focus. I would ask that you please share this episode with your friends, with your students, and spread the word. There are other back catalog episodes of Tung Sudo Focus that also might help you to improve your tournament and testing situations. As always, I would ask you to like, to share, and spread the word. And I thank you for your kind attention. Tung Sudo.